Good morning. This is Plan Well, Age Well, the third in a four-program series devoted to preparing for retirement and getting older. I'm Doug Nadvornik. This series was developed in conjunction with our partners, the Spokane Elder Resource Team. On Tuesday, we talked about family dynamics and communications. Yesterday, we dug through senior housing options and legal documents and other issues related to those. And today, we turn to financial planning and looking at how the new federal tax law changes might affect how your preparations are for retirement and beyond. How much money do you need to retire? Is there a magic number? When should you start saving? Do the new tax law changes require you to do anything differently? This morning, we're joined by a financial planner and a certified public accountant, both with extensive experience in the areas where we'll be focused today. If you have questions, you can go ahead and call in right now at 328-5877. Unfortunately, we don't have the toll-free number available this morning. So if you're calling from out of town, just let us know. We'll get you on as quickly as we can. Or you can just leave your message or your question with the person who's answering the phone. Beth and Kathy are there today. In the studio this morning are Daria Brown, who's a CPA at Frucci & Associates in Spokane, and Dustin Alberry, an independent financial planner with Northwest Planning and the American Reliance Group. You can read more about them and about all of our guests this week at the Spokane Public Radio website. Click on the Plan Well, Age Well picture on the front. Today, we've got an older gentleman as we're talking about financial planning. It'll take you to a page where you can just go ahead and scroll down. You can listen to the podcast for the first two programs. And if you're going to miss some of this program, the podcast should be available within an hour after the program finishes. So we welcome Daria and Dustin to our studios. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
So let's remind, before we get started, you're collectively, the group is doing an event on the 18th. Why don't you tell me a little bit more about that? Because that'll give you people who want to come. You'll have access to all of the, I think, of the people who have been as part of this series.
Yeah, Doug, that's correct. We wanted to give an opportunity to those listening to these live shows and these podcasts to actually meet us and ask more specific questions relative to their situation. So doing that over the radio is somewhat difficult. Obviously, we can't give advice to the masses. So we wanted to have a forum or a platform that people could go to meet us and actually ask those questions.
So let's start with you, Dustin. What does a financial planner do?
Well, good question. 10 years ago, it was a decision that led me to started out in insurance and it evolved into financial planning, which is everything financial. And working with this group, I kind of oversee my clients to make sure they're doing everything that all of our partners do. So making sure they work with a CPA, making sure they work with an elder law attorney to get their elder or their estate planning documents done, anything financial. And then, you know, the specific thing that everybody thinks about is the buying and the selling of securities and that sort of thing. So that's one part. But basically, if you think if it can affect you financially, I'm going to give advice on it.
So, Daria, then how does a CPA fit in with financial planning?
Well, we definitely work together. I will refer a lot of my clients when I see that they need some extra financial planning. We do more of the tax planning, but when they need a full picture of all their assets and liabilities and a plan moving forward, definitely Dustin and financial planners come in at that part.
So I want to get into some of the tax law changes, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but let's start, Dustin. When do you typically start to see your clients? At what time of their life?
Well, we're a specific financial organization that really works with those close to retirement and those in retirement. And the reason being is there is a ton of questions that need to be answered in that time frame that don't necessarily need to be answered early on. So that's kind of where we've chose to market our efforts. And so, yeah, 50, 55, 60, 65, that's kind of the range. That's not to say we don't get the client's son asking us about things, or we get the client's parents, you know, that are entering the Medicaid type of situations that we feel those. So, but yeah, 50 to 65 would be, I would say, the range that we work with, where people start coming to us.
So before you get to some of those questions, and I'll ask some of those, how do you treat your client's son or daughter differently than you treat them? What are the different strategies you would use according to different age groups?
Yeah, so early on, the big focus is the discipline to save. Right. The financial products and that sort of thing isn't as material, because when the markets correct and go down, actually when you're saving, you're buying more of whatever you're buying, dollar cost averaging. So it's benefiting you when the market goes down, as ironic as that sounds. You know, compared to those people that have stopped contributing in an hour living on the assets they've saved, they can't afford to have those significant drawdowns. So that's the big issue, is once you do cross over that retirement or approach retirement, the laws change. We use an analogy of yield signs in our office that I shared with you, that because we think things were this way, they're supposed to be that way moving forward, and that's not the truth. And in retirement, you definitely have to shift your focus to consistent returns, no drawdowns, and that sort of thing.
So has financial planning changed? You mentioned you've been in it about 10 years. Has it changed over that time, or has it changed in the last generation or so?
Yeah, and right now on the horizon that we're looking at is retiring now and today is different than it's ever been. And there's things at force that we don't have really time to go over. But yeah, definitely it's changing. And so you do have to adjust those plans that are out there to complement the changes of the world. You know, things are correlating today that never did. 2008 was an anomaly that I think is going to get more happen more often, if you will. You know, and that old philosophy of diversification, asset allocation, you know, spreading around risk has a flaw. All right, 2008 showed us that. So that's one thing that's changed, but many are to come, I'm sure of it.
So to Daria, then, along with the changes over the last 10 years in financial planning, have things changed in terms of the tax code and that sort of thing that people need to have thought about or be thinking about?
Well, we just had a major change take effect at the end of 2017, but it seems the tax law does change regularly over the years, sometimes in large packages like it was in December, and sometimes in smaller packages. So it is always changing, and that's one of the things I really enjoy about my profession.
So what were some of the, other than the big changes that we'll talk about, what have been other smaller changes that might affect people in planning? Is there anything that specifically comes to mind?
Just that this year we're also looking, 2017 is pretty much the same as it's been last couple of years, but we're also looking at our clients and what's going to happen in 2018 with them. So we're doing advanced planning so we can take advantage of any changes that they need to make now.
So do you want to get into a couple of those that may not have affected people when they filed this year, but will affect them when they file next year?
Definitely. Where would you like to start? We could start with, there's so many.
Well, let's pick one.
All right. Well, one of the ones you'll hear quite a bit talk about is the state and local tax deduction. The abbreviation is SALT. That one is coming up quite a bit. It is now limited to $10,000 itemized deduction. That, and it's together. It's estate and income taxes, sales tax, and property taxes. So the limit now is $10,000.
It was how much before?
Well, it was unlimited.
Oh, unlimited. Okay.
And, you know, just based on where your income was. And that's a big deal in states that actually have an income tax. So it may not affect as many clients in Washington, but it's still going to affect you, because the more real estate you own, the higher property taxes you pay, you are going to be limited there. Another major change in the itemized deductions is the miscellaneous deductions subject to 2% are suspended now until 2026. So that includes tax prep fees, investment fees, all employee business expenses. So if you're a W-2 employee and you wrote off expenses on Schedule A, those are now gone through 2026. And that's kind of where we're seeing a big effect on some of our clients, is in that area. Another major change is the home equity interest deduction. And when they first came out with that change, it sounded like they were just doing away with it for good. But then they came back and clarified that you actually can still take it if it's used to buy, improve principal residence. You can still take it as an itemized deduction, but not a vacation home. That is excluded now.
So, Dustin, how closely do you pay attention to these things?
Quite closely. Like I said, anything related financially, we're cognizant of and researching. I'm not going to say I'm an expert or a CPA. You know, I'm always going to defer to Daria and CPAs. But it's my job to know these things as well, because as I'm creating plans and giving recommendations, taxes is one of the big three in our eyes of of things to avoid, right? We all want to pay our fair share, but we don't want to pay any extra. So reducing that lifetime tax liability is definitely on our plate as well.
We're with Dustin Alberry and Daria Brown here on our PlanWell Age Well program. You can call 328-5877 if you have a question for them. They're available here to. You can take advantage of a free opportunity to get a little free advice here, and so that we hope you'll take advantage of that. Dustin, so you're talking about people my age. I'm 55, and I've got to the point, I think, about 50, where I said, you know, I guess I better start paying attention to that sort of stuff. So what is the strategy for people who've kind of squandered maybe a few years, but they still have maybe 20 years left before retirement?
Yeah, so the big focal point in that sort of equation is always, you know, results-based planning. What do you want the end to look like, and what do you have to do now to make that a reality? So if you started later, you got to do a little bit more work. So, you know, and tax law actually gives us some benefits starting at age 50, right? We can add a little bit more to your IRAs, to your Roth IRAs, to your 401ks, what they call catch-up provisions. So there's some benefits there that weren't available prior to age 50 that you can take advantage of. But getting back to the discipline of saving and understanding your plan, you know, that's the big key. You know, everybody in any industry, if you're trying to hit a goal, right, you're looking at a dartboard, you put a blindfold on, you spin yourself around, are you going to hit the dartboard? No. First, you got to take the blindfold off, right? You have to understand where you are, and you got to know where the dartboard is, where you're trying to go. So those are the two big things that we do. We show you where you are and show you where you want to go based on your input, right? Financial planning is all about the other person sitting across from us. And then we connect all the dots for you, or help you connect all the dots.
So I'm thinking that since financial planning is somewhat of a fairly new discipline, my dad, my grandfather really didn't have to worry about a lot of this stuff when they were my age. And it's kind of scary as somebody who is all of a sudden finding that he has to learn a whole bunch of new stuff. So for both of you, you know, what sorts of tips do you have for people who are just starting to get into this stuff?
You know, take that first step. Listening to this radio program, I commend anybody listening because it is getting that information. And part two is taking action, right? The old adage is knowledge is power. Then you go back and you see a quote from a gentleman by the name of Napoleon Hill that said, knowledge is not power, right? It's potential power, but the action is where the power comes in. So next week, the 18th, 5 o'clock, Corbin Senior Center, we're all going to be there. You can ask specific questions to get that first step forward. And then from there, it's up to you.
So another major change that happened was related to the estate tax exemption. And so that's actually doubled in 2018 to $11,200,000. So people think 11,200,000 and $22,400,000 for a married couple. And so most people will not be subject to that. But then maybe they won't think about a lot of states still have their estate and gift tax. And Washington's exemption limits only $2,193,000. So the financial planning still needs to come into play, and also the state planning attorney to make sure you're set up just in case you're coming to close to the Washington limit.
So you can sort of adjust and juggle so that you can get maximum benefit out of all of that.
Correct.
Yeah, and that's coupling with, you know, yesterday's presentation of Lynn St. Louis and the Elder Law Group. With some certain trust work that can be done, you know, we can improve those volumes or the amounts that you can shelter from inheritance tax. So it's not just seeing a financial planner or seeing a CPA or seeing an attorney. It's right making sure every part of your plan works and works in conjunction with one another. So yeah.
So I'm interested then, if you're working sort of as a team, and I assume this is a fairly recent sort of thing where it's you've got instead of – you know, you go to your accountant and then you go to your financial planner, but you're all not working together. Is this something of a new sort of thing where all of the disciplines sort of work together?
Yeah, I think it's going to be somewhat of the new norm. Joel Ferris kind of had that foresight and that vision, I think, 2 or 3 years ago when he created Spokane Elder Resource Team. I'm actually one of the newest members, kind of was introduced last year to it. But nonetheless, it's like I said, if I'm a financial advisor and I'm giving financial advice and there's tools that an attorney can use to the benefit to my client, isn't it my job to share with them that story? Same thing with a CPA. Too often not, you know, we see people coming with TurboTax that have $4 or $5 million. Like, you know, there might be some benefits to paying a little bit extra to meet with a CPA. So yeah, I think this is a new norm moving forward, because, you know, I can't see my own blind spots. I have to rely on professionals to look at those for me as well. So to cover my own basis and be a fiduciary, I feel that I have to work with other professionals.
And do you find as a CPA, Daria, that you're doing more referring, more sending people to Dustin, sending people to Lynn St. Louis, sending people to Joel, who will be on tomorrow to talk about long-term care insurance? Are you doing more of that sort of networking too?
Definitely. For the client, that's the ideal situation, because having experts in those fields all working on the same page for the benefit of the client is huge. And so, yes, that's very common.
So for somebody who comes to meet with you for the first time, maybe they're now armed with the knowledge that, you know, maybe instead of just coming to see you all the time, hey, can you refer me to somebody else who can help me with this? The Elder Resource Team obviously is going on this concept, but are more of the people in your disciplines also thinking that networking idea is the way of the future?
I'm not too familiar with if many other groups doing this. I know usually there's a couple connected, right? A CPA and a financial planner might have some tandem together. You know, some Medicare supplement and long-term care insurance agent might have something together. But we, you know, Joel's foresight was to have a little bit more of a robust picture in professionals, if you will. So I think we're at 8 different disciplines within the group right now. And that's not to say it doesn't grow or expand, because things change. But that's kind of where we are now, and we definitely feel that we're kind of leading the charge on that.
So that gets me thinking, as people are starting to think about this, how do they build their own little network? You could go to the Elder Resource Team, but how could they build their own little network? What are the things they should be thinking about in terms of, oh, I need to take care of this, I need to take care of this, either one of you?
Yeah, I think Kathy yesterday was the one that had mentioned
Kathy Bryant talking about senior housing.
Yep. Yeah. I think she had mentioned that it makes sense to ask somebody outside of the relevant field of who they would use, right? A third party that doesn't know, you know, the inner workings, that they trust this person or they do this thing. So reaching out necessarily not to somebody in that discipline, but somebody outside of it and who they would recommend is great. But we often are starting to see, and I don't know about the CPAs and the attorneys, but we're competing against the Googlers of the world. And we're competing against, you know, the my uncle did this or my cousin did this, which is dangerous, you know. And so those are things that, you know, I probably wouldn't do, you know, talk to some, you know, person that's not a professional, or talk to, you know, Google, if you will. And I've done it, right? Right. I got a hurt ankle, yada, yada. Next thing you know, I'm a doctor. I'm prescribing pills and, you know, what have you. But so, yeah, stick with professionals. But, yeah, reach beyond a professional for the recommendation.
Other advice, Daria?
I agree with that. And usually what I get is, well, I've heard from a friend of a friend that this is what's happening, and it's totally off base. So it's good to, you know, verify the facts and meet with a professional that knows those.
So a question from listener, and this is, I'll dispense with this one. Are you going to talk about Medicare planning today? And I don't know if Medicare we have Dennis Fletcher on tomorrow to talk about Medicare. So if you're specifically interested in Medicare, tune in tomorrow between 10 and 11. These folks have other specialties here. Another question from a listener, common misconceptions about possible costs and coverage for medical care and supported living. So you can write off medical care, at least some aspects of medical care, Daria. What can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So when the bill was being first talked about, they had talked about cutting out medical expenses as a deduction, and that would have been a real disservice to seniors, especially because we have a lot of clients that have to take out of their IRA to pay for their long-term care. And so if they would have taken that out, they would have had a huge tax bill but have spent all their money on medical expenses. So luckily that was saved. And for 2018, you can deduct what's over 7.5% of your AGI as an itemized deduction.
AGI is?
Adjusted gross income.
Yeah, yeah.
And then starting in 2019, it does go up a little bit to 10%. So you're only able to deduct what's over 10% of your adjusted gross income starting in 2019, but it's still there.
So, Dustin, how does medical care and medical planning, anticipating that somewhere as you get older, you're going to spend more for medical, how do you build that into your financial planning?
Yeah, so there's a couple elements there. One is those that want to retire prior to age 65 when they become Medicare eligible. We share them the reality of what it costs, you know, anywhere from $600 per month up to $1,200 a month. And those aren't specific numbers, but that's just kind of a wide range of numbers of what to expect. So we do have clients that, okay, retire, but go down to part-time just to satisfy that medical expense that's absolutely needed. And to talk to Daria, you have to have that, you know, 7.5% or 10% expense before they even start allowing deductions. So, you know, my advice is be proactive, right? We don't want to have to get to a point where we can deduct things. We want to have somebody else pay for things, right? And that's where the insurance comes in. Now, I'm not I don't sell health insurance. I do rely on the Dennis Fletchers and the Medicare professionals of the world to handle that. But then at 65, it becomes a little less stringent on the budget. Currently I think it's 134 for Part A, depending on income and, you know, all sorts of moving, or Part B, but all sorts of other different things that play into that. So it's absolutely a huge part of planning. And I do see that, you know, there's two major issues in our country in health related, topics, which long-term care, I kind of put into that camp as well. And, you know, our pension systems are struggling. So I think those are two focal points that every financial planner needs to look at.
What about medical savings accounts? I see the references to those. I've never had one. I see the reference to those on the tax form. Are medical savings accounts something that you use as a tool in your financial planning?
It can be. Certain high deductible medical plans allow HSAs, and you can, you know, if you're a healthier individual, you can kind of save through that plan and use it for tax-free dollars later. So definitely part of the planning. But, you know, being specific to retirement, you know, you start leaning towards the Medicare side of it once they hit 65. So I just have a small window of time where I'm working with those on individual health insurance or group health insurance plans. But once again, I defer, to a Dennis Fletcher or a Medicare.
Are there tax advantages that you can talk about with medical savings account, health savings accounts with your clients?
And I think Dustin hit on it. It comes out, and so it's tax-free if it's used for medical expenses. It can also build tax-free, almost like another IRA, where it's growing and it's not taxed, and you can save it and use it later down in life for major medical expenses and pull it out tax-free at that point. So that's a big benefit of those types of plans.
It's 10:30. We're talking with Daria Brown, a CPA from Frucci & Associates, and Dustin Alberry, financial planner here. If you have questions, 509-328-5877 is the way you can get a hold of us, and we're happy to throw your questions toward our guests and see if we can answer them. Another question from a listener: what range of medical and supported living costs do you advise people to set aside or plan for when they do their planning?
We do review stats on what things are going to cost moving forward, and the astonishing number is between $200,000 to $300,000 in retirement over the course of retirement, and that's, you know, averages, half fall above that, half fall below that. So really that's a situational question depending on the person's specific situation. But definitely it has to be a part of a plan, right? You need to understand what that's going to cost, and you got to assume some inflation numbers on that as well. If medical costs could continue to go up, the insurance premiums are going to continue to go up. So oftentimes when we're running our projections, we're inflating those costs at or exceeding inflation costs.
Just because you want to be conservative and you don't want to get any surprises down the road.
I would rather have a conservative plan that says you never run out of money and over deliver on that than have some astronomical plan that we can't attain and, you know, 5 years from now you run out of money. So yeah, the planning side of it is very pessimistic as far as the numbers and the outputs.
Corollary to that question was, knowing those medical costs can be huge, especially in those later years, how do regular people plan for it, and how early should you be thinking about that?
Yeah. So like I said earlier in the show, is retiring today is far unlike any time in history, and medical is one part of that. And so to put a specific number on it, I don't know your health history. And once again, that's part of our planning onboarding experience. I ask health related questions, and then that's because we do want to do as good a job as we can forecasting the expenses, forecasting the need for things. But most of the time, a Medicare plan, a Medicare supplement plan can pick up most of your medical costs. You know, the wild card in the room is long-term care. We know with the Affordable Care Act, that was originally put in but actually was removed because there was such an expense and such a demand. So that burden is still on people. So I think Joel's going to do a really good job tomorrow to kind of address this situation a little bit more clearly. But definitely, health and medical is a huge part of planning.
So Daria, let's go back. We started talking about some of the 2018 changes in the tax law. I'm not sure if we got to everything. Were there some areas that we even related to medical that we missed out on?
Well, another medical item is the ACA individual mandate penalty. That's actually gone after 2018. It's still in effect for 2018. So if you don't carry health insurance, you're going to be affected by that. But it is nice to see that disappearing starting in 2019. Another item that's changed is kind of a smaller item, but a pretty big deal, is the 529 tuition savings plan. So before, you could only use it for college, but now you can use up to $10,000 per year per child for K through 12 tuition. And so that's a big change. So if you're a grandparent funding a 529 plan, you can actually fund, you know, K through 12 education now for your grandchildren.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Do you have a lot of clients who are in that part where they want to do something for their you know, grandchildren or their older children even, who may want to go back to school?
Yeah, it's more related to the grandchildren, leaving a legacy, and that's all kind of that exploratory questions. How many are in your family? How many grandkids do you have? Do you want to help enhance their lives in any way? So, yeah, most of the times it gets back to 529 college type plans.
So I pulled a financial tips for seniors thing, and it's kind of interesting about some of the things in terms of seniors being kind of targets for predatory folks. And what are some of the things that maybe some of your folks, as you get to 55 to 60 to 65, should watch out for in terms of being parted from their money in ways they don't want to be parted?
Yeah, and that's a very difficult question, because when money gets involved and humans get involved, right, there's that human element of greed that comes out quite often. And the abuses are sometimes subtle, or sometimes they're egregious, right? Sometimes it's a phone scam and people get pulled straight out of money. Sometimes it's plans or financial plans that exceed probably the cost that they should. But all in all, it's that result-based planning. They need to ask, how's this advice going to help me in the end? And filter that decision up front. You know, always step back and say, what's in it for the other guy in any sales situation? And they have to be very transparent, disclosing fees, commissions, and being a fiduciary, you have to disclose those, much like a CPA and an attorney. You know, if I work for a company and I'm going to make a trip by selling X amount of widgets, the client should know that that's part of the motivation, as opposed to making sure that they have that successful retirement that they expect.
So do your clients sometimes use you as a truth, do you get occasional, I got a call from this folks and...
I definitely do, because a client will call and say, hey, the IRS just called me demanding money because my taxes are past due. And so I always tell them, say, hey, please give me your number. I'm going to have my CPA call you back. And usually that just takes care of the call. They're gone. But that's a common issue. And they use me. They do say, I'm going to call my CPA and make sure that this is legitimate. And the IRS isn't going to call you. So that's one that's pretty common, that if people just understand that the IRS is not going to give you a call, you're going to get a letter is the initial contact. So that's something that's very common. It's something else I've seen with clients is if they're trying to sell something like a boat, they'll get a call and they'll say, hey, we want to buy your boat. I'm going to send you a check for $5,000 over to pay for the shipping, but I need you to send that money to my shipper. Well, if they do that, they've just lost their money. Because by the time it gets backtracked to that original check, the funds have already cleared, but it's not legitimate. So that person is out. And I've seen that happen too.
So it's, if you have to part with money in some part of that transaction, it's probably phony?
Correct.
Yeah.
Or check into it, definitely.
So I'm interested in your saying, I'm going to check with my CPA. I think that's a great answer, I guess, and probably one we should tell people about. So let's talk a little about Social Security. We've talked a little about Medicare. We probably can't get too far into it, but what are some of the Social Security changes, or are there changes that people need to worry about or think about?
There's not really big changes at this point, but I think there's just information that needs to get out there that sometimes people will base their planning on just something they've heard or something they've read. But for one in three retirees, Social Security is 90% of their income when they retire. That's a big deal for most people. And so it's good to get the whole picture before you take that benefit. There are about 10,000 baby boomers a day, so, I mean, this issue isn't going to go away. And the difference between taking your benefits at age 62 or waiting to age 70 for a couple can be as much as $400,000 in lifetime benefits, a difference. So it's a pretty good deal at least to see the numbers before making that decision, because once you see the actual numbers, you might go, wait a second. Or, you know, the financial planner will be able to say, hey, this makes more sense. Do it this way. And just whatever it fits best for your personal plan. It's very important.
I imagine, Dustin, that's one of the big questions you get is, when should I start taking Social Security?
Yeah, it is a big question. And I think Daria hit the nail on the head there that it does take some effort. And because what they do is they send you those reports, and it outlines usually three numbers, right? If I take it as early as possible, if I wait till my full retirement age, and then if I wait all the way till age 70. So inherently, people think they have three choices, right? You know, the single individual, there's 96 months between 62, 1 month, and 70. Married couple, there's over 20,000 different decisions, you know. So yeah, absolutely take the effort to meet with somebody. And once again, you know, where do you get solid advice? Anybody that gives you advice without knowing your situation in particular, once again, take it at face value. If you actually, unfortunately, Social Security can't give advice. They give information, which is ironic because you're there for advice or ideas. That's not to say that they won't give you advice, but they're there to tell you what's going to benefit you most now. So yeah, reach out to your CPA, your financial planner, and really, really put that plan in place. You know, we talk about plan well, age well. Every single piece of our puzzle has some proactive elements. It takes work, right? You have to take that step to do it. So Social Security is a big thing.
So your Social Security benefit maxes out at 70. I mean, whether you take it at 70 or 75, it's going to be the same. Is that correct?
Correct.
And Social Security is taxed or not taxed?
Well, that depends on your income level. So as a single person, if your income is under $25,000 a year, it's not taxed. Starting at $25,000 to $34,000, 50% of your Social Security benefit would be included in taxable income. And over $34,000, up to 85% would be subject to federal income tax. And those amounts go up for a married couple. So there is a potential that it is part of it will be taxable income. Mm.
So I think about
and real quick to add to that, Social Security, that tax line that she's talking about, we call as a regressive tax, meaning it's not growing with inflation. So most of your incomes in retirement are growing with inflation or demand or RMD show up. So early on in retirement, you may not have to pay on Social Security or pay taxes on any of your Social Security income tax, but you may eclipse a time at which you do. Once again, leaning back on the plan, right? Don't you want to know ahead of time if that's going to be part of the equation? So anyways, yeah.
It's 10:40. We're with Daria Brown and with Dustin Alberry. If you want to jump in with a phone call, 509-328-5877, and we'll take your call. We've got another 15 or 20 minutes to take questions. I'm thinking, as I think about having been in the workforce for 30 or 33 years or something like that, you're used to getting one paycheck every 2 weeks or once a month. Talk about when you retire, you're talking about income coming in from several different sources. Can we talk a little bit about that and the timing of getting money so that you can pay your bills and doing all of that?
Yeah. So usually in retirement, you know, prior to come to a planner, people work till a certain age, and then they trigger all incomes possible, pensions, Social Securities, and they usually wait to take their RM, or they usually wait to take money out of their taxable accounts, their or tax qualified accounts, their IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, and that sort of thing. So yeah, managing on when to take those and when to wait on certain ones makes a lot of sense. So we, just like Daria said, December of 17, we had this massive overhaul in taxes. Majority of the tax brackets went down. And where we are financially as a country, I feel that moving forward, there's going to be a tax increase at some point. Therefore, we have an opportunity, right, to do some planning. So wouldn't you want to take maybe your money out of an IRA first and let your Social Security grow? Because I don't know where to find an 8% simple growth rate in the stock market or in an investment account. But we do know that's the case for Social Security, right? So picking when to take things and how to take things is a very, very important thing. And oftentimes it's, we just take them all now because that's what we do, right?
And I'd like to add to that, as Dustin was saying, Social Security adds 8% a year to lifetime benefits between ages of 66 and 70. And that's a big deal.
Can you explain that to me? I'm sort of, when you made the 8% reference, I'm not quite sure I understand what you're talking about.
Okay, for simple math sake, let's say your benefit is at full retirement age, which if you're born between 1943 and 54, it's age 66. So let's say you're 66 years today, you take your full benefit and it's $1,000 a month, right? If you waited 1 year from now, you get $1,080, mm-hmm. right? You wait another year, so all the way out till age 70, where it would be $1,320, a 32% increase in your payment. Now, you had to give up not receiving anything for 4 years, but as I explained, right, there's opportunity because taxes are low right now to get taxable dollars out of those bigger accounts and let Social Security grow. And the big planning element is definitely for married couples, right? Because when one passes away, you only leave one of those Social Security benefits, and you really want to leave the one that's as high as possible.
Okay.
And what's interesting with that knowledge, still only 1% to 3% of people wait until age 70 to take their Social Security benefits. And at age 70, it's 76% larger than at age 62 and 30% larger than at age 66, but 40% still take it as soon as it becomes available. So that's an interesting fact.
Because they want to retire. They want to get out of the rat race.
But a separate study found that nearly 40% of those that took it early regretted it in some way later.
And I think a big influence on taking it early is fear, right? We're motivated as humans to do things acting upon fear. And the fear is that Social Security trust fund is going to run out and they're only going to have 76 cents on the dollar for benefits in year 2033 and on, right? Well, it's ironic that the accounting firm or I don't want to misspeak here, but somebody inside of the Social Security Administration, I think accountability or something like that, I have the report back at my office, but basically states if we raise FICA taxes by 1%, it's going to solve solvency issues for 75 years, right? So Social Security could be an easy fix on a couple different layers. You know, pensions and health insurance, right? Those are going to be some bigger problems. But I wouldn't let fear motivate me to decide when to take Social Security. Therefore, I press upon my clients, let's get rid of fear, right? Let's put that aside.
And I think another issue on the same lines is we live in a culture of instant gratification. And so it's available. I want it now. Have you heard of the marshmallow experiment?
No.
Back in 1972, Stanford University conducted the marshmallow experiment, and they took over 600 children ages 4 to 6 as subjects. Each child was asked to sit at a table in a room free of distractions and was given one marshmallow on a small plate. The child was then told he would receive a second marshmallow if he could refrain from eating the first one for 15 minutes. A few of the children ate marshmallows as soon as the researchers left the room. One child ate the insides of the marshmallow, hoping no one would notice. Only 30% were successful in waiting the full 15 minutes and earning the second marshmallow. What's interesting, though, during a follow-up study in 1988, there was some discoveries. Children who were able to delay gratification were described as being more assertive, confident, had higher test scores than those who were unable to wait. So I guess the bottom line is just we live in a culture of we want it now. It's available.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the biggest takeaway I'm getting from all this is you have to be a lot more active in planning your retirement than you did 20 years ago or 30 years ago when you not only had Social Security, but you might have had a pension that was coming in. And so now you're at the point where the pension may not be there. Social Security is going to be there, but not enough, especially if you've got big medical bills. And so a lot of people get scared about that.
Yeah, so that's part of that. You know, during our presentations that we're going to have coming up in September and October, we touch a little bit about the income or the retiring today is so much different. And think of it as a triangle, right? The bottom part of the triangle used to be pensions. This country was built upon, you know, having a good pension. And pensions today are far different than they were, you know, years ago. So, for instance, there's teachers, right? Teachers Retirement System, the acronym is TERS. So there used to be TERS 1, and then TERS 2, and TERS 3, right? And they're just getting less and less of a benefit. Now, having said that, the big shift happened in the late 70s, and it really said, okay, we don't want to take the responsibilities as business. We're going to put that back on to the individual. We're still going to give you something. We're going to match these funds, and we're going to give you 401k matches and 403bs and those sorts of things. So all of a sudden, there was this influx of money. Well, and then the top two parts of the pyramid is Social Security is in the middle, right? Also a crux, a really important part. And the very top for our grandparents was money saved. Right, they didn't need as much because they had really strong pensions and Social Security took care of most of it. And then moving forward, right, that thing is flipped completely upside down, where pensions are a very small portion for most people. I think less than 10% of the workforce have a pension. Social Security is still equally important in that middle section. And then the top part now is money saved. Right now, when do you take it? How do you take it? Where do you spend it? So we used to just get paychecks all the time, and we knew what was coming in, and we knew how to spend it. Now we've gotten this basket of money, and we're being told, how do we do this? So I do think our profession is needed, and we can start to help those questions.
That gets me to the alphabet soup, and maybe you can help me sort through this. We have 401ks, we have 403bs, we have IRAs, we have Roth IRAs, we have SEP IRAs, we've got all kinds of stuff. So can we just spend a few minutes, and we're at 10:48 here, so we've got mm-hmm. just a few minutes sort of demystifying what some of these are.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way I look at them, there's actually just three types of accounts. And this is how the IRS looks at them as well. And that's tax-free accounts, taxable accounts, and tax-deferred accounts. So I'll start with tax-deferred because that's the one that has most of the numbers, right? The 401k, the 403b, the IRA, which ironically now is called an individual retirement arrangement, used to be called an account. Publication 590, Google it, look it up. But anyways, those are accounts where you get a tax benefit, a tax qualification up front. It grows deferred, meaning I don't pay taxes on the growth. But then when you go to pull the money out, you get taxed on it, right? So that's a tax deferred account. There's non-qualified annuities. There's, you know, certain assets grow, you know, stocks, you know, real estate, those sorts of things. But the bulk of them are the 401ks, 403bs, 457s, that sort of thing. Your tax-free money is going to be a Roth IRAs, you know, cash value policy loans on life insurance, 529 plans, some VEBA accounts, some other smaller things. But basically, they're going to go in after taxes, right? So you've already paid taxes on the dollars. They're going to grow tax-deferred, meaning no taxes on the growth. And then when you pull them out, based on certain stipulations, right? A CPA in the room, she can vouch for all of this. But a certain window of time, usually you can then get all the proceeds out tax-free. And the simple way to explain it that we talk to people is in farm terms, right? Would you rather pay on the seed or the crop, right? And with taxes projected to go up, you'd want to pay on the seed. Therefore, your Roths and those sorts of things. Now, situationally, I'm not giving advice to everybody. It's different for everybody. And then the taxable accounts are going to be those, you know, savings, CDs, mutual funds, you know, any non-qualified brokerage accounts. And those gains are going to be taxed on an annual basis. And so those are the three types of tax accounts that you need to be aware of.
And then again, you have to talk with your financial advisor and figure out which of those is going to be most advantageous to you.
Yep. And managing funds in each of them are different, right? I don't want to manage money the same in a deferred account as I do as a taxable account. But oftentimes when people come in, you know, they're in a 60-40 split, 60% stocks, 40% bonds. It's just that away across everything, you know, which is lazy advice in my opinion, right? Because taxes are so huge, we need to be cognizant of it and manage it accordingly.
Now, how's the CPA fit into this?
So I recommend with my clients at least maxing out the employer plan where they provide the matching contribution. I mean, that's your initial start. And if you can max out the entire amount and their 401k that's set up, and then look at all the other options too and talk to your financial planner. But at the minimum, just make sure you match where you get that employer contribution.
Because you're getting somebody else's money, as much as somebody else's money as possible.
Yes.
Yeah.
I tell clients it's 100% rate of return. Once again, I can't find that anywhere else other than a matching contribution. So take as much of it as you can. Absolutely.
So let's go to one more. We're at 10:51. We've got one more listener question. What options do boomers or their parents have when they have not or cannot save the money likely to be needed for their, in this case, medical or supported living care? But I suppose you can talk about any expenses that you're looking at down the road. So that gets to that emergency question. I've got a need, but I haven't done what I've needed to do in order to really make myself comfortable there.
Yeah. So once again, it's getting clarity on where you are and the choices you have moving forward. Everybody has choices. It's just they need to understand them. It might be a Medicaid route. It might be a state assistance route. And so talking to some professionals, you know, you'll start to get that clarity and that understanding of where I need to go. And it, once again, it's situational. If it's a long-term care event, Joel's going to talk a little bit about tomorrow. But basically, we all have plans. It's just not having a plan is a plan, right? You don't understand what's happening, so it's therefore a reactive retirement. I just have to react to what goes on. Where in our instance, you just work with one of the professionals or, you know, you meet with us and we start to give clarity to those answers so that you know what to do in that event, even if it is a Medicaid type situation or a government assistant type situation.
So let's spend a couple more minutes. Were there any more tax areas that we didn't get to that you thought were important, Daria?
Well, just be sure to file. April 17th is around the corner. If you're not able to file, get that extension in, because in case you owe, that's going to save you the late filing penalty, which is a pretty severe penalty. It's not an extension to pay, though. So if you do owe, try to send that in. Or if you can't pay at all, still file that extension, because at least you'll be saving on one of the penalties. That's the larger one.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. I'm always curious at this time of the year, as people wait until the last few days. Do you work 24 hours a day?
Pretty close. Yeah.
As people have the options then to file themselves, how has that changed the way CPAs have worked?
I think there's always going to be a job for us because, yeah, TurboTax is great if you have a W-2, but once you start getting into business income, rental income, you know, these issues we're talking about today, the planning side, I mean, TurboTax is definitely not going to give you any of that. So I definitely think that our profession is here to stay for sure.
And you're not in the tax mode, but are you at the point now, Dustin, where more and more people are getting into the financial planning and realize they really need to have a one-on-one with somebody?
Are you talking like the demand that the
clients are coming? Yeah, in terms of the demand for your services.
Yeah. It's you know, Daria touched on it earlier. 10,000 boomers started hitting 65 in 2012 and will do so for the next 20 years. So there's just a wave of people coming through that absolutely need help. So therefore, statistically, yeah, the demand is getting much higher. You know, I find ironically, though, you know, our industry is going to be held to a DOL standard at some point, I think.
Department of Licensing?
Yep, Department of Labor.
Oh, Department of Labor, okay.
But anyways, that's been shelved temporarily by the administration, but that's putting the client's interest above that of their own. But that's going to make the barrier for a financial advisor to get into this industry a lot harder, right, because it's not going to be transaction-based as much. So less planners, more demand. I mean, I don't know what kind of equation that makes out to be, but definitely reach out to somebody earlier than later just so that you can get a place and get some help.
So for the folks who are listening now, and we've got just about 2 minutes left in the program, what are, in lieu of reaching out to you or before reaching out to you, where are the best sources of information that people can go online or go to their library or and find out more about planning, tax planning, that sort of stuff? Where do you like to refer people to?
Well, one, obviously this group is there for education, right? Not for anything else. So we do offer events, 2 to 3 times a year. That would be a good place to start. Outside of us, like I said, talk to that non-professional and see who they're working with, you know, to edify what Kathy Bryant had said. And then if not, Google, as much as I hate it, you know, start seeing what you need to do as opposed to the specific things of doing it. You know, when do I need to file for Medicare? When do I need to, you know, what are my opportunities to file for Social Security? And start putting together the picture of when decisions need to be made, and then chip away at them one at a time, right? Because retirement's daunting if you look at it as a whole. But that's where we try to make things simple. All right, here's what we're going to do linear and make it simple.
Yeah, I agree. Just go to those websites, like the IRS website, the Social Security website, and just start reading and figure out. You'll start realizing what you don't know and what you need help in those areas in.
This hour in our Plan Well, Age Well series, we've been talking about financial planning, tax-related issues specific to seniors and their families. I want to thank Daria Brown from Frucci & Associates, Dustin Alberry from Northwest Planning, and the American Reliance Group. Thanks for coming in, folks.
Thank you.
They will participate in the workshop. Remind me, Dustin, when the workshop is.
Next Wednesday, April 18th, 5 p.m. at the Corbin Senior Center.
Free and open to the public?
Free and open to the public.
Tomorrow, on the final installment of Plan Well, Age Well, we turn to long-term care insurance and Medicare. Joel Ferris will be here. Dennis Fletcher will be here. Our thanks today to Beth Severn Johnson and Kathy Sackett for their help. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 for Plan Well, Age Well here on KSFC, FM 91.9 Spokane, 100.3 in Coeur d'Alene, and KXJO at FM 92.1 in St. Mary's. Thank you.